Hello and welcome to the Unplayable Podcast. Today we're wrapping up Australia's huge win over Bangladesh at the T20 World Cup. My name is Josh Schonefinger and I'm joined as always by Louis Cameron. Welcome, Louis. That was a huge win by Australia.
An absolute thumping, Josh, that was. We turned up for a T20 and we got a 21.2 over game when you add Bangladesh's 15 overs it took for them to make just 73, bowled out for 73 in the 15th over. Can you believe that? And Australia got there in just 6.2 overs. That's just two balls after the power play was over. It could not have been more comprehensive, and I don't think 8 wickets can really summarise the margin of this victory.
Well, maybe a better indicator is there were 82 balls to spare for Australia, which is quite incredible when there's only 120 in each innings. But just to do a quick wrap-up of the scores before we get into it, as you said, Bangladesh were all out for 73 after 15 overs. Adam Zampa did most of the damage, was 5 for 19. Mitchell Starc and Josh Hazlewood both got 2. And then Australia came out with intent, and we'll get to why in just a second as well. Aaron Finch, 40 off 20 balls, and Mitchell Marsh back in the team at number 3, 16 off just 5. So it was a pretty one-sided affair.
Pretty one-sided. It wasn't great for the neutral. It was even worse for the Bangladeshis. But it was fantastic for Australia, and you hint at it there. Australia's net run rate, which was in the negatives, I believe it was negative 0.63,
if I got that right, yes,
coming into this game, which was not good. Negative, not good. just to make it very clear to our listeners, because net run rate can be confusing at the best of times, but it was very bad, and now it is not very bad. It is up to, in the positives, it's 1.031, which puts them ahead of South Africa, who have also won 3 games. Australia have played 4, won 3, lost to England, of course. South Africa now have lost 1 game, won 3. They've got a game against England, and they are below Australia on the net run rate. So England, obviously top, undefeated. No one's catching them. It sets up a really interesting final day where both the Australia-West Indies game and the England-South Africa game are being played back-to-back.
That's right. I said Australia came out with intent because the stats came through at the halfway point that Australia needed to reach Bangladesh's total in just, was it 8.1 overs, Louis?
That's right, yeah. According to our very reliable friend, Mazhar Arshad, who is never wrong and is very good on matters of net run rate.
And very quickly, the broadcast picked up that same number. And Australia knew that, and they came out and it was only 6.2 overs when they knocked off the runs. And it may not even come into account. In fact, if Australia win their last match against the West Indies and South Africa do lose to England, as we're expecting, well, Australia will have more wins than South Africa. So net run rate won't impact the actual outcome, but this is a good fail-safe for Australia. And it's a good sign as well for them form-wise as well.
And it might actually give them some wiggle room. So if South Africa do somehow beat England, and look, it's T20 cricket. England are going very well, but South Africa are going okay too. There's, you know, there's every chance that, not every chance, but there is some chance that could happen. If they did that, it would more likely to be a narrow victory, we might think, which means their net run rate might stay the same. It wouldn't go down, I couldn't presume. Can you win and your net run rate go down?
Yeah, that can happen.
Can it really?
Especially in England's case, it's so good. If they have a narrow victory against South Africa, then that run rate will come down, yeah.
And I guess the other thing that I hadn't thought of until now was that the further you go into a tournament, the less your net run rate fluctuates, right? Because you've got more, that's a net run rate from all your games. So it's going to fluctuate a lot at the start and then less as you kind of go on.
We'd have to assume, yeah. We might have to get a statistician or a mathematician onto the podcast.
That would be a very boring podcast, gosh. As much as I do love the work of some of the statisticians out there. But so the important point is Australia could lose that game against the West Indies and South Africa could then beat England and Australia could still finish second. So that is in play, but Australia don't want that to happen. Australia want to win against the West Indies, and that virtually guarantees them a spot in the semi-final. Am I right? I'm scared of saying the wrong thing here. That's about right.
I think you're right. You're right. And so that match against the West Indies is on Saturday night Australian time, 9 p.m. on the Eastern Daylight Savings time zone. That will be immediately followed by England-South Africa. So a good chance for all-nighters for the big cricket fans out there.
Yes, it'd be some tired people reporting into. Oh no, that's a Saturday night, so no one would be tired going into a Sunday.
Let's hope not. Let's backtrack to the Bangladesh innings, which was over pretty much before we knew it. Adam Zampa did the bulk of the damage, 5 for 19. That's his first 5-wicket haul for Australia, which is quite impressive considering how long he's been around. But he certainly deserved it, and he also nearly took a hat trick. Let's hear what he had to say about that moment.
Yeah, because I got the 2 wickets probably 3 overs before my next ball, I actually didn't think anyone else knew that I was on a hat-trick. I wanted it that way because I didn't feel like I wanted the batsman to know either in case he tried to slog one or whatever. So, I said, oh, Wadey, that was my hat-trick, mate. And he goes, yeah, I know, I tried to catch it for you. But, that was hence the wry smile. But, I've never got a hat-trick, still haven't got one. But I can't really blame Wadey too much. He's been taking some beautiful catches in this World Cup in particular.
I just love the fact that Zampa thought that he could kind of get away with no one knowing that he was on a hat-trick, kind of playing it secret, you know, like club cricket, like everyone would just forget. But like, it's international cricket, it's been broadcast everywhere around the world. Like, I reckon people are probably going to pick up that you're on a hat-trick. And it was quite a funny moment because Australia was at that point, I mean, what were they? Bangladesh was 7 or 8 down, and Wade had actually taken a really good catch off Zampa earlier.
And as Zamp said, Wade has been really good this tournament and taken a couple of great catches. If you do want to see Zampa's 5-wicket haul and Wade's missed chance, we'll call it a missed chance because I guess technically it is.
It was a missed chance,
Head to cricket.com.au. We'll also leave a link in the bio so you can head straight to those match highlights for fans in Australia. What did you think of Zampa? He's been obviously excellent all tournament. He's now the leading wicket taker in the Super 12s. And is he best as a lone spinner, or do we want to see Agar come back into the team, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it makes too much difference to him either way. This was an interesting one because I thought we all assumed, and Australia kind of said as much by picking the 3 fast bowlers as well as having Stoinis and Marsh on standby there, that they probably thought Bangladesh might struggle with the extra pace. And they did early on. I mean, they lost Litton Das first ball. They lost Sumai Sarkar to Hazelwood, both of them chopping on. Mamadullah also went to got out to Stark. So they did struggle a little bit with the pace. But the impact of spin was really notable. Maxwell got a massive wicket of Mushfiqur Rahim, who has had a couple of good innings in this. He had 1 good innings in this tournament, I should say. And he is an excellent player of spin and just in general. But, yeah, I mean, Zampa just – he ripped through them, didn't he? And they're all genuine – all but one of them were kind of genuine wickets. He got a Afif, who's quite a nice left-handed batsman, out for a duck with his first ball. That was a nick straight through to Darren Finch at slip. He got Shamim Hossain caught behind with that really good catch off Wade that we were talking about. And then he kind of wrapped things up with an LBW and another catch at slip. So really, yeah, I mean, he said it wasn't his greatest ever performance as an Aussie bowler, but they're his best figures, so he'll take it.
Is there anything else that we can take away from that bowling innings? Hazelwood and Cummins and Maxwell, they only combined for 7 overs between them. Stark did bowl his 4 overs, but on the whole, when it was so comprehensive, there were 4 wickets in the power play. It was sort of, you would say, what is the word I'm looking for there?
Well, I don't think there is a word. Like, I don't really think we learnt much out of it other than Zampa's still a really good T20 bowler. Australia's fast bowlers are still really fast, and they're going to trouble Bangladesh batsmen on wickets that aren't what they are like when they play at home. And we might touch on that a bit later with some of Bangladesh's issues, but we didn't learn much from this. It doesn't mean Australia went backwards or forwards or whatever, but, you know, this, I think we will learn a lot from this West Indies game because for all of the West Indies troubles in this tournament, they came into it as a hot favourite. I was the one, you know, pumping them up saying that they might win it. So I think we'll learn a lot from Australia's next 3 games if they get that far.
Certainly good for Australia's confidence as well, especially Captain Aaron Finch, who hit 40 off 20 with 4 sixes, some quite large, I might say, as well. He was really impressive, wasn't he? And even though there were quite a lot of slogs and agricultural shots that didn't quite come off the middle, he did eventually find the middle of the bat.
And that one's been crunched straight down the ground again for six more. Back-to-back sixes for the Aussie skipper. Doing it in a hurry here at the moment.
He was swinging like a rusty gate early on. Like I really enjoy watching him bat when he swings that hard. He just kind of has this look in his eyes like he wants to just pulverise every ball for six. He nearly ripped Mustafiza in half with a ball that got hit back at him that he actually apologised to Finch, apologised to Mustafiza, which was a first for me.
You made a joke that Mustafiza would have had to pick his hand off the side screen after that effort.
Yeah, just about. It was coming in pretty hot. So, I mean, it was a drop catch. When you're defending 73, you probably got to take every chance you can get. And then Taskan Ahmed, who I thought bowled quite well, his figures of 1 for 36 off 3.2 probably don't do him justice. I thought he was pretty decent. Finch got a hold of him a bit later, but he was furious when Shumi Saka he was on the deep mid wicket boundary and seemed to be in about maybe 10-15 paces, and a ball got hit off Finch exactly to where he maybe should have been, according to Taskin's reaction. Who knows? But after that, he just went bonkers. The six over cover off Taskin was particularly impressive, and then he followed it up with a back of the hand slower ball that Finch saw pretty early and hit for another six. And by that point, it was party time, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Unfortunately for Australia, they did lose 2 wickets. Taskin did finally get his man. He bowled Aaron Finch as Finch went for another. Let's call it a slog. He didn't quite get it. And then David Warner was also bowled by Shoaiful Islam.
It was interesting. We were kind of touching on some of the permutations around the net run rate and so forth. And our good friend Marza pointed out that Australia's net run rate would be boosted further if they hit a four or a six or however many runs they could off when the scores were level. So the best case scenario for them was to get the score to 73. And then hit a six. What in fact happened was probably the next best thing, which was they got the score to 72, so they were one behind, and then Mitch Marsh hit a six to take it to 78. So remarkably, and it's infuriating that Australia's net run rate will be boosted further, probably only by a 0.001, I imagine, more than it would have been, but because they scored 2 for 78 as opposed to 2 for 74, weird, but... That's the net run rate world we live in.
It is crazy, and every run may well count when it comes down to it. I just want to ask, Australia brought up their 50 inside the fifth over, and they also recorded the highest power play so far of the tournament, 2 for 67. Is there a case to be made for coming out that hard? Well, maybe not quite that hard, but quite hard in every game because, it sort of came off today, even though there was maybe a little less on the line if you're setting a target.
Potentially. It was interesting speaking to Matthew Wade yesterday. Had a good chat to him, and he said one of the things that he took out from the England game, I guess one of the only positives he took out, was some of their lower order batting in that game where they fielded five bowlers as opposed to four, as they did in this one against Bangladesh. The lower order kind of lifted them to a decent total. They got up to 125 off the back of Agar hitting two sixes. Yep. Mitch Stark hitting a six and Pat Cummins hitting his first two balls for six. So he actually said, regardless of whether we play five or four bowlers, I think I'm paraphrasing him here, he thinks that there's a case for them to kind of go, maybe not that hard, but quite hard through the middle and top order because there's the hitting to come, with that faith in Cummins and Agar if he plays and even Stark. So... yeah, interesting. I think it's a valid point. And as the wickets, I mean, it seems like the wickets might be getting flatter as opposed to, we thought it might go the other way, and spin would play more of a part as it kind of goes on. But potentially, I'm not sure if they're using newer wickets or the ICC have been saving some of the good strips for the finals and for the last few games. But India scored over 200 last night. And that's the first time that milestone got reached during this tournament. So some signs there that there might be some high-scoring games and, that might suit Australia.
Yeah, that's a good point. Australia's next game is in Abu Dhabi where India scored the 200. So we could have another high-scoring match coming up on Saturday night. It makes for an interesting point. You touched on Australia's balance. All of a sudden it looked like it was good again with Marsh back in the team and Agar out, even though Agar was Australia's most economical bowler against England. So it's interesting how this is sort of playing out. But Australia went back to the plan A of their tournament, Mitchell Marsh back in at number three, and he scored 16 off five balls tonight.
Yeah, and Adam Zampa suggested in the press conference afterwards that they might change that again depending on matchups and team balance. I think matchups is probably the key word there. They seem to think that Agar might have an advantage over some teams, or maybe they might look at playing. The one they haven't done yet is dropping one of their three fast bowlers, which at this stage you think might be Cummins. Just going off potentially how he bowled, he wasn't one of the most effective tonight. He maybe wasn't one of the most effective against England. I don't know who would make way in that scenario, or if that scenario is even being entertained. So it's an interesting one whether which way they kind of go. The one I wonder, and they might be fine with it, but I wonder how the middle order feels about how they bat with four bowlers as opposed to five. Wade has obviously said that they need to have more faith in the lower order and not shut up shop if they lose three or four early wickets potentially. But I mean, does it subconsciously affect the batters? That's the unanswerable question for the Aussies at the moment.
Near the boundary line. And taken. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And I reckon as well that they will be reluctant to drop a quick, because we've seen a little bit of Stoinis this tournament and we haven't seen Marsh at all. So we really probably need to see some more out of these all-round medium-type bowlers before we can let go one of these ultra-good quicks. I suppose that's their thinking.
That might have been one of the the negatives of a huge win tonight, was that they didn't need any of them. I mean, the signs Maxwell showed in bowling the power play, again, were pretty good, although he did cop some tap in the game against Sri Lanka along with Marcus Stoinis in that match. So there were the question marks that got raised after that one, which prompted them to go to five bowlers. So, Mitch Marsh still hasn't bowled in the tournament. So, that's a really interesting one heading into these crunch games.
And Bangladesh are officially out of the T20 World Cup. Well, they couldn't make the semis anyway, but now they've played all their five games. Unfortunately for them, five losses. Where to from here for Bangladesh?
It's a weird one. Like, they're just hard to get a read on. I thought that'd be a lot better. I thought they were very impressive against Australia, albeit in home conditions that really suited them, and that are pretty foreign to visiting teams. But, nonetheless, beating Australia 4-1 and then also beating New Zealand, they're no easy beats. But they were just nowhere near it in this tournament at any point. They lost three wickets or more during the power play in three of their five games. One of the other games, they lost two in the power play. They obviously lost all five games. There was no Shakib in this game through injury. Tamim Iqbal didn't play in this tournament. And they can't keep relying on Mushfiqur Rahim and Mamadullah. I mean, poor Mamadullah. He was, I felt for him a bit tonight. He was facing a lot of long-winded questions in the press conference after, having a pretty tough game. But look, there are the makings of a decent side there. I think Rahman hasn't had a great tournament, but he's a real talent. They've got to really look after him and protect him. Taskin and Shorafal are really handy bowlers, and Taskin especially has a bit more than I even thought he did. Just watching him bowl against the Aussies tonight, and they've always got about a million left-arm spinners, so they'll be right in that regard. On the batting, I think their batting's a bit more raw. Look at Mohammad Naeem, who looks a really nice, tall, left-handed opener batter. And Afif and Shamim have showed signs down the order. I will never forget the running cover drive Afif played to Mitchell Starc during that series in Dhaka where no one could hit it off the square. And I think he played that shot first ball in one of the games. So, but none of those guys deliver on a regular basis yet. So some good signs for some positive signs for Bangladesh potentially. But, I think they need to have a good look at them, where they're at.
Yeah, there are some senior figures that might need to be reviewed by the time the T20 World Cup rolls around in Australia next year. But as you said, Taskin Ahmed, who I think the broadcast had him clocked at 146 km tonight, he could be a key in that upcoming tournament for Bangladesh.
Yeah, you're going to need fast bowlers to win in Australia. And it's a positive sign for all these. I wouldn't put Bangladesh as a developing side. They're an established power, which is why losing all five games in a World Cup is a major disappointment. But when you look at the teams at the rung below, they were talking about on the broadcast, but it seems like all of them have a genuine fast bowler now, or a couple, which is a bit of a sign of progress for some of the developing nations, definitely, associate nations. You know, my favourite, Ruben Trumpelman for Namibia, has been getting a good bowl. Hopefully a Big Bash team is looking at him, because there aren't too many fast bowlers who, can bowl over 140 kilometres an hour with the left arm, but B, have an unreal name like Ruben Trumpelman. And there are some others. Afghanistan have one or two. Some interesting signs.
Yeah, of course, we're huge fans of Ruben Trumpelman on the Unplayable podcast. Louis, is there anything else you would want to add after tonight's game before we sign off for tonight?
No, just that I can't wait for Saturday night. It's going to be an awesome all-nighter for a lot of people back here in Australia. It's going to be fascinating to see whether the Aussies can get over the West Indies and whether South Africa, you know, in big games at World Cups, they don't have a great track record. So I can't wait to see how that unfolds.
That's right. It will be 9 o'clock Australian Eastern Daylight Time, Australia versus West Indies, immediately followed by England versus South Africa to decide Group 1 at the T20 World Cup. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you on Sunday morning with the wrap-up from Group 1.